This is Bristol, and you are listening to a podcast from the Bristol Confringe reading series.
Welcome back, everybody. The second reader for tonight is going to be International Man of History, Mr. Scott Lewis.
I'm going to break my usual mold today. I'm going to read something that's not yet finished. I've been saying I've got a novel coming for quite some time now. It's not, still not done. It does exist, and this is the second chapter from it. One of these days, I really must try to spend 24 hours without getting shot at. Dasho Ragsdale Wessex hated it when his subconscious stated the obvious, but he couldn't deny that at this particular moment it had something of a point. The pistol shot thudded into the ornate chaise longue he'd just dived behind, causing a loud scream to erupt from one of the girls in the parlour. Scrambling on his hands and knees, he poked his head around the arm of the antique furniture piece and retracted it hurriedly as another bullet created an upholsterer's worst nightmare in the plush velvet velour. The day had started off ever so promisingly too. A nice cup of lapsang at the Golden Goose, followed by an interesting morning walking through the bazaars and hawkers on Nanjing Lu. Midday found him strolling along the Bund, past the customs house with its teeming throng of customs officials, traders, and out-of-work coolies looking for masters to employ them. The wharves of Shanghai hummed with activity as Deschelles walked through the dockyard district, where the scent of the tea being laden by the chest onto any one of a dozen clippers, all itching to set sail and scamper back to Britain, almost managed to mask the slight undertone of ammonia, sweat, and pungent river water that pervaded the docks. Captains keen to get underway yelled at the wharf rats and dockhands, whilst drunken sailors on shore leave staggered from bar to bawdy house, looking for something to spend their money on, wet their whistles, or slake certain other thirsts. A sleek new cruiser, the HMS Endymion, sat at her berth as members of a crew loaded crates of epoch coke for her boilers. The powerful armed hull of four turrets of twin 12-inch cannons, a testament to the might of the South China Sea Squadron, and a delightful reminder of Britain's colonial power. Almost 50 years after the British and their enhanced etheric munitions had crushed the Qing Emperor's forces in the Opium War and made Shanghai a protectorate, the colony was a thriving, vibrant trade hub that attracted people from all over the world. Americans, French, Dutch, and Germans, all eager to reap the rich rewards the British stronghold in the Orient offered. Dashiell liked life in Shanghai. He'd been here almost half a year now, on and off, ever since that minor incident in the Caribbean with the daughter of the governor of Jamaica, and her cousin, and their maid. In the course of the last few months, he had found that young Englishmen with few scruples, plenty of money, and a penchant for general caddishness could make quite a comfortable living for himself in the darker corners of the Orient. He had managed to wangle his way into several schemes and endeavours, including a rather successful expedition to French Indochina that had seen he and his colleagues make off with a rather large amount of treasure from the hidden catacombs of a recently discovered temple named Angkor Wat. A few fake business propositions had seen him make rather large sums of money from transactions that he actually had very little involvement in, or in some cases didn't exist whatsoever. In all, life in the Far East was proving to be very profitable indeed. He'd taken lunch in one of the wharfside coolie noodle bars, run by a young woman named Wei Jing. They talked in a broken hodgepodge of his bad Mandarin and her substantially better English about this, that, and the other. The Englishman had slurped down some of the best chow mein for at least a mile and a half, as Wei Jing told him about what she'd seen and heard lately. "What do you think about the Green Gang?" she suddenly looked up and asked him. Dash stopped, laden chopsticks halfway up to his mouth. Wei Jing looked at him skeptically. "The Green Gang. They're a gang of criminals, Dashu. Very bad men who do many bad things. I hear someone say Green Gang looking for English with brown hair and beard, who cheat them out of lots of money." Dash swallowed. "Really? Did they say why? Or what they planned to do to him when they found him?" "Not really. Just that it would involve much pain and acupuncture needles stuck where acupuncture needles not belong." She looked at him curiously. "Are you in trouble, Dashu?" He laughed, tried to wave it away dismissively. "Me? No, no. Why should I be in trouble? You know me, just a simple tea trader here to trade tea." The look that she gave him was less than convincing. "You're my friend, Dashu. You were very worried me the last few days, and now I hear English is in trouble with Green Gang. If this is true, you need to be away from here as fast as possible. Dash smiled, shook his head. It's not me they're after, Wei Jing. Relax. Have I ever told you, by the way, that your English gets better every single day? She rolled her eyes and shook a noodle-covered spatula in a general direction. Stop trying to flirt with me. You know how I learn English. Just working here on dock is good teacher. Lots of English, and American, and other country who speak English. The conversation continued in fairly light-hearted terms, and when it and he was finished, Dash hugged Wei Jing and left, drawing a scandalous gasp from some of the older coolies. He then promptly went to the nearest dockside ticket office and booked passage on the first tramp steamer out of Shanghai that evening. Right. Think. What's the situation? Two armed men in the doorway, trying to kill him. Only a rather elegant piece of furniture between him and incredible pain. At least five other people in the room, and his trousers were over there somewhere. His gun was even further away, in a locker out in the room downstairs. Only visible means of egress, a frosted glass window, leading out into thin air and a 9-foot drop onto the cobbles of Fukien Lu. In hindsight, going back to his favourite opium den cum brothel had probably not been his smartest move ever. However, the thought of not spending one more wild afternoon with the delightful little strumpet named May had proven too much to resist. So before returning to his lodgings, he decided to contrive a final dalliance with his Oriental Rose. Upon arrival at Madame Fong's, he checked in his trusty Webley, leaving it with the bouncer who looked after the patron's lockers. For some unfathomable reason, weapons were frowned upon in the reception rooms in the boudoir, but Dash thought nothing of it as he paid for 3 hours and moved into the lusciously appointed parlour. The room was decked out as opulently as possible. Plush velvet couches and rich silk curtains abound under a ceiling of gilt-trimmed bas-relief, a relatively convincing facsimile of pre-revolution French styling that was completely out of sync with the building's simple Chinese facade. Gossamer-thin, criminally translucent rose curtains and a half-dozen carved mahogany booths allowed the girls and their gentlemen callers some privacy, rigged as they were to fall shut at the pull of a rope. Never in the history of the Empire, Dash thought, had there ever been so many cushions and pillows in one space. Two other clients, neither of whom Dash recognised, but both of which were older, more than slightly portly Caucasian gentlemen, were relaxing under the languid touches and soft flirtation of Madame Fong's girls. At his arrival, both pulled their ropes, the curtains falling shut in a rather futile attempt to block the outside world from looking in at the shenanigans they tried to conceal. Dash only had eyes for the slender beauty in the red silk qipao in a booth of her own at the end of the room. Madame Fong's had a well-deserved reputation for employing attractive girls, but May broke the mould. She was stunning, an almond-eyed beauty with cascading black hair and a figure to die for. She smiled demurely as she saw Dash and patted the shillong on which she was sprawled, knee crooked to cause the side slit of the figure-hugging silk dress to fall away. The sight of that long, olive-coloured leg drew an unsolicited purr from Dash's mouth, and he moved quickly over to the chair and took a seat, gently running his fingertips over her thigh. Did you miss me, my pair? So much, she giggled, fluttering her eyelashes. Her English was almost perfect, but if he was perfectly honest, Dash hadn't come by to talk about the weather. His fingers continued to slide under the hem of the qipao, but further progress was halted by a slap from May's lavender-scented palm. Always so much of a rush, Mr. Dashu. Well, my sweet, I have to leave this evening, and I'm afraid I may not be back for some time. But you will come back, she purred, leaning forward to loop her arms around his neck and draw him down towards her not-quite-heaving bosom. Blessed with the slender frame typical of many Chinese girls, May's chest wasn't so much voluptuous as merely present. As his unslapped hand caressed her side, however, Dash wasn't overly concerned. The intoxicating smell of her perfume made him light-headed as she kissed him, deft hands removing the belt of his safari trousers and tossing them aside as their lips met and she pulled him down atop her. Not only will I come back, my flower, but I'll bring you gold and diamonds and take you away with me to England where I'll make you a princess. It may not have been strictly true, but it most certainly had the desired effect. His loafers quickly followed his belt to the floor, and before Dash could so much as think, he was bottomless, and May was smiling up at him, grinning wickedly. She tossed the thick corduroy trousers across the booth and looked up at him with sparkling eyes. Oops! She kissed him again, arching her back and pressing her willowy body against his. You promise, Mr. Dash, you will take me to England? Oh yes, my dear. I promise on my honour as a gentleman. Now, about this qipao of yours. Things have been going remarkably well for almost 2.5 minutes, and Dash had managed to coax May into a state of partial undress, without losing any more of his own clothing. Then the first shot rang out. It came from the foyer, and one of the other girls in the room barely had time to scream before the heavy wooden doors were thrown open and a pair of men stepped into the parlour. Dash turned to look at the source of the noise, and about the same time as the first man spotted him and levelled his pistol at the booth where he and May were occupying. He rolled off the concubine, who let out a yell of protest, and hit the floor a split second before a bullet passed through the space previously occupied by his left temple. Another two shots rang out, one tearing up the panel flooring of the parlour inches away from Dash's leg, and the other shattering an antique priceless Ming vase that was at least 5 years old and made by a craftsman on Fujian Lu, who specialised in reproductive pottery and bad willow pattern glazing. Now, as he cowered behind the chaise lounge, trying not to listen to the slow, deliberate footsteps of the gunman and May's pleading, frightened sobbing, he pondered the limited courses of action he could come up with. First of all, he could stay where he was, get shot at, and probably die. Even if he didn't die straight away, he would not long afterwards, his fate doubtless involving sharp pointed things being stuck somewhere quite unmentionable. Either way, it was not his preferred course of action. Secondly, he could do the decent thing, as expected of a prominent British gentleman in the colonies. He could come out from behind the chaise lounge, defend the women, thwart the ruffians, overpower and detain them, before turning them over to the British authorities, thus winning the undying affection of May, Madame Fong, and the foreign community. Or he could charge across the room, dive out the window, hope he didn't break his neck, and run like a whipped cur in his underwear through Shanghai. As a British gentleman of his calibre and standing, only one of these was a viable option. Come on, old boy. Do it for England. On three. One. Two. A shot whacked into the mahogany booth not far away. The men were close now, probably close enough to stand up and tackle. Three! Dash exploded from his crouch like a coiled spring and leapt up, vaulting on top of the mahogany booth. May looked up, cried in delight, and then her face fell as Dash threw himself forward. Odd sights were fairly common on the streets of colonial Shanghai, but Old Wei had to admit that the sight of a half-dressed Lao Wai crashing through the window of a well-known house of iniquity was probably the strangest thing he'd seen in at least a fortnight. The veteran beggar drew hard on his cracked bamboo and clay pipe bowl and watched as the man, wearing only a bush jacket, cravat, a pair of woolen socks and his underclothes, dashed past him down the street. He shook his head and was just about to sit back against the wall and ruminate over how strange Shanghai had become since his childhood, when two more men appeared in the window carrying pistols. One lifted his weapon, took aim at the fleeing figure, and promptly missed. His bullet skipped off the cobbles, and the ricochet passed clean through the clay bowl of the old beggar's smoking apparatus. Wei looked in broken-hearted shock at the ruined pipe as the two men leapt from the window and began to pursue the rapidly disappearing foreigner. Dodging, twisting, and on one occasion manhandling, much to the protestations of the pretty young thing he manhandled, his way through the crowds on Fujian Lu, Dash didn't dare look back. For a start, he could hear the sounds of pursuit as his assailants shoved through the press of shoppers, coolies, and workers. And secondly, he was far too busy trying to come up with a cunning plan for getting the heck out of the rather tenuous situation he found himself in. He knew that the road ahead went through the weekly market before spilling out onto Baoshan Lu, the centre of Shanghai's bustling theatre district. If he could make it that far, then there were innumerable alleyways he could duck into. Or he could try and find some means of conveyance to carry him to safety. And then he saw it, on the side of the street, sitting empty and unused, just waiting for him. Gao hated his job. All day long he pulled his rickshaw, from the Bund to the consulate over to the coffee houses, or to the docks, or to the opium dens, every single day. He didn't like the Lao Wai, who said things he didn't understand and shouted at him when he tried to tell them that he couldn't speak their language. The men looked funny, and the women dressed strangely. He didn't like the mandarins or the businessmen, who treated him like a slave, and sometimes kicked him if they didn't think he was moving fast enough. But still, it paid for him to eat, and his meagre lodgings, and one day he would have saved enough to have a farm in the country, with his own pig, maybe a wife, and possibly even new clothes. He sighed, and took a breath, ready to start to call for business, when suddenly someone dived into the back of his rickshaw. Anywhere, somewhere not here, go, 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 go! Gao turned round to look at his new employer, and patiently explained he didn't know what he meant. He opened his mouth, then gulped before asking in his native tongue, Laban, why are you only half-dressed? The foreigner looked at him incredulously. In stuttering Mandarin, he replied, No time. Just run. Anywhere. But Lauban, would you like clothes? We can go to the market. You can get very cheap clothes. If we don't go, we'll be killed. Nastily. Now run! If Gao needed any more encouragement, a loud crack split the air as a bullet smashed through the back of his riptrill, whipped past the Laowai's ear, and embedded itself in his hat. He turned, grabbed the handles, and ran for his life. The rickshaw careened down Fukien Lu, and as it bounced its way along at breakneck pace, Dash relaxed, and risked a look behind them. His heart fell as he spotted their pursuers climbing into a rickshaw of their own, the bulkier of the two assailants shoving the driver over before hefting the wooden frame and taking off after them at quite the clip. His companion took a seat on the cab bench and took aim after their fleeing quarry, over the heads of the crowd, many of whom started to scream, panic and jostle at the sight of the weapon and the report of the earlier shot. The bullet passed well wide of Dash's cab, but the sound of renewed gunfire spurred Gao into an even greater run, sandaled feet slapping on the stones as he ran like a man possessed. As the rickshaw clattered down the street, scattering pedestrians left, right and centre, he called out, "Lauban, what's happening? Why are they trying to kill us?" Dash looked over his shoulder, trying to peer through the bullet hole torn in the cab's canopy at the rickshaw chasing them. "I'm not sure, but if they catch us, I'll tell them you're my best friend and you help me with whatever it is they want to kill me for." "But I don't even know you." "They don't know that, do they? Now go through the market, I've got an idea." Gao closed his eyes and begged any divine spirit that may be listening for deliverance as the two rickshaws plunged into central Shanghai's main commerce area. The Bei Fukien Lu street market was busy. In fact, it was always busy, but today it seemed particularly crowded, and the hawkers, coolies and grocers massed among the stalls were shouting at the top of their lungs to drown out the sound of their competitors. Stacks of watermelon, bags of spices, long streamers hung with bouquets of dry chili, and small cages filled with live ducks gave way to tables stacked with pots, pans and other houseware, while rice vendors strolled the aisles, bulging sacks of rice hanging from poles artfully balanced across their shoulders. Housewives, students and the servants of the mandarins and the wealthy inhabitants of various cantons rubbed shoulders with the indigenous Chinese population of the surrounding avenues and hutongs, all of whom seemed out to be out perusing the wares the multitude of stores had to offer. It was, in short, not really the kind of environment in which one expects to be bowled over by a rampaging rickshaw, but the first two dozen market-goers found themselves faced with just such a situation, as Dashal's clattering conveyance plunged headlong into the throng, scattering shoppers left, right and centre. Gao desperately tried to keep the rickshaw under control. He did his utmost best to weave around the few people who didn't manage to get out of his way, relying on years of familiarity with the carts to know just how much wrist movement would be required to swerve out of the way. Dash held on for dear life, shouting at everyone he could to get out of the way. One rice vendor was too slow, the canopy of the hurtling cab catching the end of his pole and spinning him around like a top, causing him to fall in a heap a few feet behind the fleeing Englishman's impromptu getaway vehicle. He sat up and made to shout when suddenly a figure leapt acrobatically over his head. He yelped and dived flat on the floor as a second rickshaw passed over him, wheels speeding over the packed cobbles a few inches either side of his body. Risking another glance backwards as they careened through the market, Dash cursed himself as he watched his pursuer bolt the prostrate coolie. He had half hoped the fallen marketeer would delay the two assailants for a bit longer, but the unexpected outbreak of athleticism had scuppered his cunning scheming. Looking around through the panicked throng, he spotted another opportunity to thwart the plans of his annoyingly tenacious would-be assassins. A table of precariously placed watermelon lay not too far ahead, presenting him with a ready-made inconvenience for the two folks behind. As Gao ran past the mountain of fresh produce, Dash reached out and grabbed one from the bottom of the already unstable stack, starting a cascade of ripe, succulent green bundles of chaos that spilled onto the street behind them. Trying to pull a rickshaw through an avalanche of onrushing citrullus lanatus proved too much for the burly foe. He managed to avoid the first watermelon, and two more went under the iron-shod wheels, spattering pulp and juice all over the road and several cowering onlookers. The rest, however, bounced and rolled and split and burst all over the place, and eventually the flat leather and wood-soled shoes of his handlers lost traction as he stepped on a piece of broken watermelon skin. The waxy fruit skidded out from under him and he stumbled forward. The forward momentum of the rickshaw meant the step of the cab took him in the back of the knees, and he howled in pain as his legs buckled and he crashed to the floor. The handles banged against the cobbled street and caught on the uneven stone, causing the cab to flip onto its side and throw the hapless passengers out, straight into another fruit store. The two men slowly, painfully got to their feet, only to find themselves surrounded by a mob of angry storekeepers and shoppers. As his rickshaw burst out at the other end of the market, Dash watched the two killers disappear under a flurry of kicks, beatings, and assaults, with everything from a broomstick to a deathly wounded wok. Gao kept running for a few more junctions, slowing down only when Dash was convinced he was no longer being followed. 15 minutes later, he pulled up outside the hotel, where Dash rented a suite. The exhausted rickshaw driver collapsed to the floor, sweating profusely and gasping for breath. Dash called to the concierge, who disappeared inside. The rickshawman looked up at him through eyes streaming from fatigue. Why you need a rickshaw? You realize you could have run just as you were. Dash looked at him skeptically as he handed him a substantial wadge of paper tail. You honestly expect an English gentleman to run through the streets of Shanghai with no trousers on? I'd be laughed out of every club in Asia. He turned and walked into the hotel, leaving the exhausted rickshaw driver staring up after him from the floor.
Well, thanks very much, Scott. We'll save the interrogation of Scott for the end of the day. So it's glasses replenishing time again now, and in about 5 minutes, we'll have Ross Clark.
Bristol Con Fringe is a monthly reading series produced by the Bristol Con Foundation. Our thanks to the Shakespeare Tavern for providing us with a venue. The music at the beginning of this podcast is The Future by Chevy 174.